Moin Moin und herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Folge vom Logistik-Podcast. Auch heute wieder mit dabei, Andreas. Moin Moin.
Good evening, Tobias.
Ah, jetzt hast du mir die. Jetzt switchen wir auf Englisch. So, good evening everyone in today's podcast. And today's podcast will be in English again. I just wanted to make the intro like I always do. When we are talking in English, there is always a guest on stage talking English. So I'm very happy to welcome you, Dave, once again on our podcast stage. Good evening.
Good evening. Great to be with you.
So you have been to our podcast for several times. You're an expert in supply chain management, dealing with it all the day, all the night. I don't know. Quite a lot. So you worked in logistics for Continental and Rank Movers McDowell in the early 90s. And switch to the field of consulting and software, especially there in the field of supply chain, as I just mentioned. You were responsible for business development, solution design, sales, and leadership in between for many years, principal lecturer at different universities in the UK, always teaching supply chain and logistics, leadership, and marketing. Happy to have you here. And today, we're talking about the topic of trust and cooperation in supply chain planning. So quite a big topic, quite something we already talked on the podcast to you. So we are happy to for you. Or we are happy to have you here talking about the topic. So first question, supply chain planning was explained in this channel before. Why is it important to always talk about trust and cooperation in supply chain planning?
I talk from experience more than anything else. Working with senior executives in a whole range of companies, one of the reasons why I think it's important is because plans are breaking down because there is a lack of trust in the elements of the planning process. That might be people, relationships, systems, processes, but I see things failing because there are disconnections. And I think of it as a bit like an electronic circuit. All the pieces are in place, but they're not joined together well. And often, as a consequence, the system doesn't quite work as well as it should do. Some of the alarms don't get triggered. Some of the sensors don't work. As a consequence, decisions are more complex, more difficult, and often slower.
Okay, to start talking about trust, we took a look at the definition of trust, and I just will read it. Trust is built on consistently demonstrating competence, integrity, and care through transparent communication, fulfilling commitments, and acting with empathy. It requires taking calculated risks, being accountable for mistakes, and showing a genuine concern for others' needs and perspectives over time. So when we read this definition, there are words like care, commitment, empathy, accountability, genuine concern for other needs, that are not necessarily the vocabulary we are used to bake processes, I called it, or to design processes. So how do responsibles break down those emotional needs that are mostly found on the human interaction to make their teams succeed?
I think it starts with thinking about senior leadership in supply chain. The first thing I would say is that it's very important that people trust people who are competent in something. If you are competent in nothing, then you're going to be a poor leader and people are going to struggle to trust you. Now, you don't have to be competent in everything. I think sometimes it's very good to acknowledge and to identify and say, hey, I know about these things, but I don't know about transport planning or scheduling or production planning. Yeah, there will be chinks in your armor, let me put it like that. But then you have to build a team to make sure that you have got people around you who are experts in those areas so that the team can be trusted. And I think I can't whether I've talked to you about this before, but the concept of a T-shaped person that says, okay, you're broad in terms of collaboration, but you've also got some deep domain expertise in some area means that you're anchored well, means that you can work well with your team. And then you have to start to be honest with people and show care when people are struggling, but also show care when the system is struggling or the business is struggling. There's nothing worse than having a blame culture. A blame culture is often an indication of a lack of trust. And often when a company, a supply chain comes under pressure, people start throwing insults around and criticisms around. And it's an indication that the trust has got broken or is sensitive and fragile. And actually, one of the most important things that you can do is when trust is broken or trust is uncertain, is to rebuild better. You know, if you've ever had a part of your building fail because of some structural lack of integrity, actually, you need to come back and build it back stronger than it was before, because that builds confidence. That means that you're not going to kind of wonder, is the foundations going to fail again? And foundations are key in this, in my opinion. Foundations are there to make sure that there is a robust process, a robust team, and the ability to reach beyond the team into other parts of the business and to the extended supply chain to deliver value with confidence.
Okay, so you just talk about maybe a base of a foundation of trust. Are there, from your point of view, are there limits of trust? You just mentioned if the foundation is damaged or something, is it gone forever, or how where is the limit at this point?
I think sometimes it's easy to bring things back to personal relationships. You think about when trust was broken, you know, think about somebody going through a divorce, for example. You know, there is a structural disconnect because of a brokenness in relationship. Is that ever going to be rebuilt? Probably not. And it's full of emotion and a whole bunch of other things. But what are the limits of trust? I am sure you guys and other people listening to our call today would know people and think of people they would trust with their lives. Now, I'm not suggesting everybody in your supply chain team you need to be able to trust with your lives, but there will be people that you've developed such a deep relationship. And I think some of the tests of the level of trust within processes and teams are just, when do you talk about uncertainty? When do you talk about gaps? When do you talk about things that have failed or things that are broken? Because unless you can grow your trust, then these will always be sensitive, fragile areas, and they become no-go zones. And the problem with no-go zones is that the more you have, it's a bit like walking through a minefield. You do it so slowly that the reality is you don't do the things that you should do, and you certainly don't do them efficiently and effectively.
Okay. So our topic for today is trust in cooperation and supply chain planning. How, from your point of view, how is trust linked to cooperation?
Okay, interesting. Can I just step back a little bit just before we get to that and think about, because one of the things that I started to unpack but didn't finish was trust. The lack of trust, what does it lead to? It leads to uncertainty, and supply chains don't like uncertainty. The more uncertainty we have, the more delay there is. The more delay there is, there's a reduction in the quality of the decisions that are made. And so that's why I kind of want to just lay that foundation. So how does that lead us into areas of cooperation and collaboration and those kind of things? Well, typically within a business, there are rules about how you work together. There are contracts of employment, there are processes, and there are things that are well defined. And you can get a little bit that beyond the business, because you will have contracts of engagement with suppliers and customers. But often where we get into cooperation, the rules are less clear. The guidelines are less defined. And consequently, you're building upon the history that you've had before. Now, let me just give you an example, because I like to make this tangible. I think it's really quite important. Let's say you've got a supplier and you are using 80% of their capacity to run your supply chain. And you hear about a change in your demand, significant drop in your demand. At what point do you tell your supplier there's going to be a reduction coming? Now, often people would have a mindset that says a better day is coming, so we'll find the demand to fill that. As a consequence, let's just hope that this sorts itself out and your sales teams are out there trying to generate this new demand to fill the gap. But the problem is, if it doesn't get filled, then suddenly, with maybe a month's notice, you're now telling your supplier, hey, I'm sorry, we're going to drop our forecast by 45%. You know, now the supplier's having to possibly lay people off or produce extra inventory or do something as a consequence. Trust has been broken in those moments. And actually, I think one of the good indicators of collaboration and cooperation is when you give bad news early. Because you're at the end of the day, I've used this quote before, but I don't apologize for it. And Martin Christopher said, you know, supply chains will compete on supply chains and services, not products and prices. Well, the supply chains and services piece is all about your extended supply chain. It's about capacity, collaboration, information sharing. And those are the kind of things that will drive better trust, increase levels of visibility, because you start to open the kimono, if you understand that illustration, and share some of the deeper, darker secrets that maybe you wouldn't otherwise share with the rest of the extended supply chain.
So we come to the field of transparency and of openness and of talking often, as I understand, because it's not useful to leave it until the next sure fix in 2 months, but to stay connected and get instant feedback as well.
Yeah, I think feedback loops are fantastic. There's nothing better. I'm looking at you guys here today, and as we're talking, you're nodding, and you know that even that simple feedback loop builds trust. We're talking about something that we're interested in. Body language speaks volumes. Behavior speaks volumes. The little things we say speak volumes. Just even a simple thank you. It helps to build trust and relationship.
Yeah, it shows that you're on the right way when searching for the way. And so you agree that you can keep that direction, I would say. Yeah, okay. So when we were preparing this podcast, you also talked about trust in data, trust in processes, and I mean, we touched trust in people. What do you think about the other two, the first ones, trust in data and trust in processes?
Okay, this is a more challenging area because it's not about relationships. It's about structures. It's about how those structures work together. And an example would be, in your planning cycles, whatever they are, you bring a team of people together to make decisions based upon some element of plans, whether it be S&OP, transport planning, budgeting, IBP, those kind of processes. When you bring those people together, one of the first things is, what am I looking at here? Is this my data? And you'll have the finance team with their view of the data. You'll have the supply chain team with their view of the data, and the transport team and the warehousing. They'll all have their own view of the data. Firstly, because they look through a different lens. Some are talking pounds, Deutschmarks. Oh, sorry, that's old school, euros. Or some are looking in kilos and pallets. Some are looking in terms of man hours. So people are looking at with different, also they're looking over different horizons. But if the source of the data is different, and maybe it's aggregated in different ways, and maybe the rules are different, you suddenly find that people start to question the data, and therefore they question the basis of the decision that's being recommended. And so we've got to firstly synchronize the data, and there's an enormous amount of time spent in planning processes reconciling data. So this, you know, And that can also be things like external data and those kind of elements. So number one, the data itself, the raw material, but then how it's assembled and the way it's looked at. And I'm going to go to some ouch points here, because one of the things in the planning process is you will have different people sitting around the table who are underwriting decisions. Let's say whether you're going to run overtime for the next 4 weekends to be able to hit a new contract that you've just picked up. That decision will be made, but different people will be looking through different lenses. The manufacturing director, he'll be looking at whether the order can be delivered. The finance guy will be looking at whether it's profitable. The sales guy will be looking at, can we hit the customer service targets? And they've all got different objectives. And sometimes those objectives compete. And why have we got competition internally? We need to be competing with our real competition and spending our time and energy doing that. So KPIs and KBIs, key behavior indicators, are the kind of things that will help to build trust and to incorporate a more reliable decision based upon more reliable processes and better quality data.
And by I by doing so, I understand you get a better understanding of everybody participating, and you build a certain common ground to have one data set that's valid for everybody in some kind of way.
Yeah, I think as soon as executives are playing a bit of poker around the boardroom table and they're keeping their hand to themselves, then there's a real challenge, because the opportunity or the risk is not out on the table for everybody to engage with. And that's where trust matters. Do I trust people with the real me and the real departmental challenges I'm dealing with?
Okay, so I think we got the basics. Let's go back to Tobias' question. How does trust and cooperation interlink, or is it the thing you explained in the last question?
I think how it interlinks is it gets beyond just relationships to actually what are the structures for collaboration? What are the processes? I mean, there's an organization in Europe called EduPeg, you know, and they encourage people to collaborate in different ways and different levels. But one of the reasons they do that is they say, let's take some of the competition issues off the table. And if we take some of those competition issues off the table, that means we need to share more real time, we need to share better data, and that will enable and facilitate better collaboration and cooperation. Cooperation's a choice. I'm choosing to cooperate with you guys today. If we wanted to make it argumentative and spar the whole conversation, the tone would change, the language would change, and the results would be very different.
And the cooperation is always some kind of trust into what is building out of it. So you trust that today's episode will be good, and you will be able to do whatever. And we trust into the same. So it's in supply chain planning. It's more or less the same, that trust and cooperation are linked at this moment to trust the process.
Yeah, and I guess it's also then about the length of the relationship. We've known one another for a number of years now, and consequently, even though we haven't met regularly, we built upon the last time. And that's one of the statements that we often say in logistics: you're only as good as the last delivery. But actually, you know, a good delivery built upon another good delivery means that actually you've got to go quite a long way back to look at a failure. And cooperation and trust is not just about not failing. It's also about what you do when failure happens. Now, are you able to turn it around? Are you able to go the extra mile? I was expecting, I ordered something on Friday to be delivered on Saturday. I paid a premium price for the delivery on Saturday. By 5 o'clock on Saturday, I realized it wasn't coming. You know, I'm now, and I'm not going to name the company, that's not fair, but the reality is I'm now going to question whether I'm going to order from that company again. And not only that, I'm also going to question anybody else who uses that logistics company to make that delivery. So suddenly uncertainty's crept into my relationship in this particular area. And that's going to breed a bit of contempt, I guess, and uncertainty. And we don't like uncertainty in supply chain, do we?
And sometimes I even experienced situations where a failure improved the cooperation and improved the element of cooperating together, because you started to talking about how you talk, how you do the things, and not just expecting a result.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. Failure is a moment where you get feedback. And it's how you handle that feedback. Do you learn from that feedback and say, can we do things better? Wasn't it Lexus who started picking up cars for maintenance? They had a problem with maintaining, I think it was some problem on the car. And they, rather than make it the customer's problem, they said, we will come and collect the car from you, take it to our showrooms, repair it and return it to you. That's become their modus operandi now for maintenance and repair. And it's set a standard in the industry that means other companies are now moving in that kind of, or have moved in that kind of direction as well.
So we talked about trust. We talked about cooperation. Cooperation is more than just trusting people. Do you have some ideas about the additional elements of cooperation and what is important to know for supply chain management?
Okay, I think we probably need to put some kind of good foundations in place. So I'm sure you gentlemen have heard of the wonderful lady Kate Vitasek from the University of Tennessee. Maybe you haven't, but she's done some enormous work around vesting, and it's about vesting in relationships and collaboration and cooperation. So if you go and look on the University of Tennessee website, you look up the word vesting. Kate Vitasek, spelled Vitasek. There's an enormous amount of material on her website and on their website that enables us to look at how we relate together to collaborate. And it's often built on trust. But some of the things say, okay, Bill, if you've got an important relationship with a supplier or with a customer, make sure there is a senior executive relationship so that it's not just transactional. It's gone beyond that. It's a relationship of people, and you want to get to a win-win situation. So when failure happens, it's not his problem or their problem or our problem. It's the joint problem. We're going to solve it together. And so it's not about winning, it's about winning together. And so I would say that's a very key element of thinking about building trust, maintaining trust, and expanding trust. And one of the things about trust is trust builds a certainty, and certainty builds a deeper relationship. As a consequence, that means we are more sticky in our relationships. Somebody who you trust, you're not going to let them go quickly and say, hey, this other company down the road is 4% cheaper. Yeah, but can we trust them? We don't know. And so trust becomes part of the stickiness of future relationships and future commercial activity.
So if trust is grown, it's kind of an asset. I would say it's built up on, or it's a non-material asset, you would call it in finance accounting. If you
Yes.
build up a software and you build up a lot of processes working together, it's the same in human behavior. Yeah.
Yes, you often find when companies are sold and the innovator or the person who started that company is required to stay for X number of years afterwards because they want the trust and the relationships he or she has built over time to stay with the business, not to leave with the entrepreneur.
Yeah. Okay. So, taking a look at and the practical side, do you have some best practices you can share about establishing trust in corporations or in teams? Just some examples to make it a bit more operational.
Well, I think firstly, at a people level, understanding who's in your team and what kind of roles they play. So whether it's Myers-Briggs or Belbin scores or those kind of psychosymmetric profiles, it's useful to understand who are the detail people, who are the non-detail people, who are the people who complete and finish things, because you often find friction if you've got three completer finishes in the team or three strategic people. So understanding the breadth and depth of your team, sometimes even looking beyond your team to the people you work with is useful. So you understand where your strengths and weaknesses are. But that can also be true in terms of skills as well. Understanding where strengths and weaknesses are in terms of knowledge, visibility, and then processes and data. So best practices, I would also include an Australian professor, John Gattoner, has written quite a lot around different types of people in supply chains. So, you've got the negotiator who likes to go out there and win the negotiation. And then you've got the collaborator. You want to make sure you've got someone on your team who's a collaborator, because they are the people you need to pay attention to when trust is breaking, because they're the people who will pull other people in. They'll identify where people are opting out. They'll pay attention to where people are keeping secrets and not sharing information. So understanding who's on your team, emphasizing that and encouraging, let's identify the collaborator so we can actually make sure that he or she is helping us to make the best decisions that we can make. And then also giving yourself time. I think that's an important element. You talked about visibility earlier on. One of the things is the further ahead we look, the less panic or the less time-driven decisions we need to make. If we can just slow things down just a little bit by improving our visibility, we have time to build trust. We have the opportunity to invest in relationships. If you are doing everything at 90 miles an hour, trust rarely gets delivered. Trust rarely gets expanded. It becomes a constraint and it all becomes transactional. And one of the problems with transactions is we're only as good as the last one that happened.
So from your point of view, is trust some kind of leadership which persons have to bring into a team, or where's the connection to leadership?
Well, I think leadership sets the scene. Leadership sets the culture. Is this a safe place to be honest? If I come up to a team meeting and I share an honest answer about something and somebody jumps on me and says, no, you can't say that, then there are issues around the ability to be open and honest. Is there room to make mistakes? Google set great examples. I think Dyson did as well, where they gave room to the innovators to make mistakes because that meant people take risks. And the challenge of risks and trust are things that don't sit comfortably together. We trust you not to take a risk. Yeah, that's what investment banking is about. We put money in the bank to be kept safe. We don't want it to be risky. We talk about things like risk profiles, about where you are going to invest, where you're not going to invest. And the same thing would be true about your team, the people you're going to invest in, who are you looking to innovate? So it's certainly a matter for leadership. Sets the culture, sets the tone, but it's also a responsibility of the team to play our part and to step up and play our role, call things out when they need calling out, but then also self-leadership. Am I being the best me that I can be? If I'm only bringing half of my skills to the table, then the team loses out and starts to distrust me.
Okay, so thank you, Dave. I think you explained very well what role trust does play in supply chain planning. If we take a look at the global stage, trust and cooperation are a little bit outfashioned at the moment. What are your thoughts on this?
Trade tariffs and all those kind of things. I think those are some of the things you're like, well, that's part of the problem. That's part of the challenge, is that people feel there is no longer a level playing field. So they pulled their ramparts in and they're saying we need to protect ourselves. And that's a sign that there's distrust going on. So you're quite right. It's not a theme for today, but you are finding people saying, how can we build trust in other areas? Because we can't be uncertain in all areas. So trade tariffs at the very highest level are driving people to find trust platforms in other areas, whether that be working more tightly with your customers and your suppliers, or whether it be stronger contractual relationships. The problem with going down the stronger contractual relationships is that builds rigidity into your supply chain. And when you start building rigidity in, that will drive up costs. I mean, one of the things we've lived in the freedom of the last maybe decade or so, maybe two decades, has just been that costs have come down as there's been a freedom to trade in ways that we didn't have in the past. Some of that rigidity is returning now, and that's going to create some interesting behaviours. I really wouldn't be surprised if we see some more significant takeovers in supply chain and some large companies as people try and protect themselves from this kind of level of tariff distrust.
Okay. And perhaps we can lean back and say, I mean, trust is a quite cheap element in building up something. As you explained, trust and cooperation are kind of free. You have to invest time and you have to invest in relationships, but fixing it all by contracts is much, much more expensive than relying in trust. Okay. You're teaching supply chain at Warwick, one of UK's top universities. How do your students see the moment and the challenges they are facing when they coming into the logistics world and supply chain world?
I think one of the things I find fascinating about Gen Z and beyond of those students who are coming through universities, they're doing typically doing master's degrees when I'm teaching, is that they do not understand the complexity of legacy. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of companies who've had supply chains and had processes around for decades, and they carry some of that legacy, you know, where a production line has been installed in a building or the historic building that the company started in. And if you were going to redesign your manufacturing or your supply chain, you wouldn't do it the way you're currently doing it. And so they don't see the complexity of legacy. So they see things as very simple. Everything's open, all the data's shared. And typically they've experienced it through the B2C environment. You and I think about, you know, however we buy stuff online, we have such visibility and traceability now that we can look on our phones and see where a product is and when it's going to be delivered and when it's forecasted to be delivered. And all the visibility of transport delay and those kind of things. But the problem is, the supply chains are so much more complex than that. There's a whole bunch of hidden stuff. And I predict that as that next generation of students that I'm teaching come into junior management and middle management, they will make statements like this, especially with AI, where they say, I can do this on my mobile phone. Why can't I do it on my enterprise system? And they won't understand data protection and because they'll say, I can do all this on my mobile phone. And you're especially around AI and using AI to help to drive some maybe more creative and more informed decisions. They'll just want to throw data at it. And I think there's going to be some really interesting areas when they start to say, what do I trust to make a decision? And here's an interesting phrase for you to think about is, is the thing that I'm making the decision based upon, is it coming from a trusted source? You know, whether that's a person, whether that's a process, whether that's AI, is it a trusted source? Can the data be relied? Because it's all about trust.
Quite interesting question, and the next question is what makes it a trusty source of information, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I will leave the listeners to make that decision for themselves. I mean, some people would say, you know, Google's reliable. Yeah. You know, Wikipedia is reliable. Yeah. You know, I don't know whether you've ever thought about these kind of things, but I think about these quite often. Or, you know, automated cars. I'm very comfortable jumping into a car with a taxi driver. When it's an Uber car and the taxi driver's hands off the wheels and it's the car's driving itself, again, I'm okay with that because there is someone sitting behind the wheel. But the day I get into a taxi and there's no one sitting behind the wheel, right now I'm still getting out the other side, which is crazy in one sense, because you think about when you fly anywhere, probably 80, 90% of the flight is flown automatically. So, you know, there are some... What do I try? There's almost a level of emotion here about, you know, maybe I'm showing my lack of trust of technology. Interesting.
Right, but when talking about flights, it's quite the same, right? Just as you mentioned, a flight is typically 80 to 90% automated, but there is someone sitting in front of it, and you're sitting in the back, relying and trusting on him that he might... solve a problem when you come along. So the same with taxis, and I just read a book some time ago about Shenzhen, where there are cars without a person in it and without a steering wheel. So maybe we can explore it.
Interesting.
Would be interesting. Yeah.
Not even a steering wheel for me to grab when I panic.
No. Well, not really. So, but interesting. So, usually at the end of a podcast, first of all, we are very thankful for your time and all the insights you brought to this podcast and gave us about the thing of supply chain planning with especially trust and corporations. Usually we are asking the question, what's maybe a medium or something you might recommend to our listeners. So, we changed the question a bit on the topic of today, and we would like to ask you, is there any media takeaway from the last month which you might recommend to our audience, and with the implication there's something to learn? Is there anything you might think about?
I'm going to indulge myself just for 30 seconds here, because we were talking about this in the pre-show discussion. My grandson asked me very, very recently, "Grand Dave, what do you do?" And I thought about trying to explain to a four-year-old what supply chain was. And then I realized I probably couldn't. And if I couldn't explain to a four-year-old, how can I explain it to anybody else? So I'm going to big myself up for just this one moment. You know, I write a blog, Supply Chain Planning Food for Thought. And my blog for this week was, how do you explain to a grandchild what supply chain planning is? But let me take that as an example. There is lots of good stuff being written out there. And I would just say, start following people like Janet Godsell. Professor Janet Godsell's writing some really good stuff out at the University of Loughborough in the UK. Former Professor Amira Khan, who's writing some very interesting stuff around risk and risk management. I would follow those two people and look at some of their stuff they're writing, but read what they write with the intention of taking away one thing and doing one thing with whatever they write. So just look for one idea. I think it's so easy to say I've read 20 papers and I do nothing with anything that I've read in the 20 papers. I think it's much better to read one paper and come up with one idea and do something with one of those things, because that means that we've used our time effectively, we've made a change, and we can make a change, one difference. Michael Mosley, who's no longer alive, he started a series called Just One Thing. And I'll just give this as a throwaway example. One of the things he said for Just One Thing, he said, if you want to improve your balance and your circulation, stand on one leg when you're cleaning your teeth. I've been doing that now for, you know, probably a couple of years now. It wasn't easy to start with, but you know what? Just for those 2 or 3 minutes whilst I'm cleaning my teeth, I'm improving my circulation and my balance. And that's just one little thing he said a few years ago that I've now done, and it's changed my life. You know, there's lots of little things that we can do that can change our supply chains, our companies, and the way we work in teams.
Quite an interesting idea. I've never tried it before. So maybe have a try. So I'm coming on the author, but when talking about atomic habits, there is also this curve where the author says, if you improve by 1% per day on a task, your effort over the year will be massive. I mean, in the end, it's 365%. If you keep it. So that's, I think it's the same idea as you just mentioned. If you concentrate on one thing and try to be the expert, just what you said in the beginning, you can't be an expert in everything. You have big broad things in your knowledge, and some tinier, thinner things. So this is the way you might improve. So
it's the whole principle of compound interest, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Cool. Thank you very much for this quite fast-going podcast today. It was very interesting talking to you again. I'm very happy you made it here and took the time for our audience. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming up. We will put your LinkedIn profile and, of course, your blog into our show notes so people can read what you're thinking and talking and writing about, but also maybe connect with you if there are some different tasks beside the podcast for you to think about. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
So, dear listeners, we are at the end of our podcast episode today. Happy you stayed until this last minutes and seconds. See you again next week, probably then again in German. And thank you very much for listening. Have a nice evening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Dave. Very good.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Never quite know where things are going to end up when you do things live. I mean, I much prefer. I did a couple of panels with a North American podcast, and they wanted everything scripted. And okay. I just dried up, to be honest, because I'm not good at memorizing everything I'm planning to say. I'd be rubbish as an actor, but I just find the adrenaline just means that we go to some interesting places sometimes. Sometimes it needs editing out. Sometimes it doesn't.
if you join some thoughts and if you play the ball from one side to the other and it works out well, it's quite good. And I mean, we only have 40 minutes. That's not too deep, but it gives some impulses to the audience. And that's the thing we want. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gents. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
One second. Do you want to rehear it or can we put it out just like we recorded it?
Out. That's fine.
Okay. Cool.
I broadcast every week on a Sunday, nothing to do with supply chain, and I put it out raw. So if there's a few mistakes in there, that makes it real.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tobias. Cheers, Andreas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.